You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I am your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have with me once again, for the second time, I believe, Ryan Gudurski. He's a friend of mine who lives real close to me here in Queens, Middle Village, Queens, actually. And so thanks for joining me again, Ryan.
Thank you for having me on again.
It's really good to have you. I should mention to our listeners that, you're a native Queens fellow. You grew up here. I moved in here from the Buckeye State, but we are neighbors, and it's a very nice little area that we have here. And you are frequently on Fox and Fox Business, Fox News, and a lot of different radio shows across the country. You've been talking, I suppose, a lot about the midterm elections, I suppose, and that's what we'd like to ask you about today. Regarding the House of Representatives, what is the Democrat majority now at last count, and do you think that's pretty stable now, or are we likely to see some more gains by the Democrats before it's all over?
Well, they picked up about 37 House seats. There's a question of two more. California is very slow in counting their results. So the questions right now exist about Utah 4, which is likely to go Democrat, which is Mia Love's seat. She was the only black female Republican in the House conference, but a horrible campaigner. Utah 4, California 10, California 39, California 45. 39 and 45 are Orange County. And then maybe a suburb of Georgia, which is Rod Woodall's seat in north of Atlanta, and also North Carolina 9, which is the suburbs of Charlotte, that's likely to go Republican. So Democrats will have picked up between 37 and 40 seats after it's all said and done, which is a quite substantial gain.
It really is, a lot more than when we first heard the day after something that was supposed to be something like 26, I thought, but which would have been...
Yeah, well, there's a lot of early voters now that are counted later. I mean, states have expanded how early voting works. But Republicans, the good thing is Republicans gained at least one, if not two, Senate seats in the U.S. Senate. So they kept they didn't have any losses in the upper chamber, and they've gained in the upper chamber, which is good. Right now there's a recount going on in Florida, for the Florida Senate seat. Rick Scott's up by 12,000 votes. It seems very unlikely they're going to be able to flip that. The only chance they have is if they have more shenanigans in Broward County. But it's good if we have 53 U.S. senators. It's good for the Republicans because that means that there cannot be a rogue one or two or even three Republicans. You know, Romney or Collins or Murkowski or any of them, or Ben Sasse cannot sit there and stage coups on their own the same way they could when it was 51-49 and you had, you know, John McCain and Jeff Flake running around. So the Senate is much more conservative. The Republican class in the Senate is much more conservative. So that's at least good.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned early voting and how they're doing that now. Do you think that opens the door for some shenanigans? Or what's going on, if you'd comment a little bit on what's going on in those two counties down in Florida? I guess the same counties that were problematic back in the presidential election, the Bush-Gore election, right?
It is different. So Broward County is the most Democratic county in Florida, or one of the most Democratic counties in Florida. It's a major, major county outside north of Miami. And it has had a long, long, long series of corruption scandals in the county. The current woman who's in charge of it, she was a Jeb Bush appointee because Jeb Bush had to send state police to physically remove the last person who counted the votes in Broward County. In 2016, this woman was found guilty of destroying ballots to favor Debbie Wasserman Schultz in the Democratic primary. There have been people who have filled out affidavits that have stated that they've saw people filling out ballots, workers filling out ballots. Illegal aliens have voted in this election. They've caught illegal aliens voting in this election. The Gillum and the Democrats have argued that those votes should count. Boxes are constantly being found of new votes everywhere. She's mixed in provisional ballots with regular ballots, which are illegal. It's total pandemonium. She either is completely inept or she is openly trying to steal this election. And either way, Rick Scott has not done enough, and neither has Pam Bondi, the Attorney General, or the RNC, or the Republican Senatorial Committee. None of those actually really worked hard enough to sit there and stop this flagrant abuse and stealing this election.
What's your theory on why?
I don't know. I do not, for the life of me, I do not know. And I've been screaming from the rooftops, they need Rick Scott's Senate seat. Rick Scott is the governor. It's not like he has no power.
Right.
He could absolutely remove her from office, and he just hasn't. And I guess so that he seems like, he's not wielding abuse or something like that, which, great. What, you're going to give the Democrats a victory that they stole. So they need to sit there and do something very, very quickly.
So let me understand, Ryan, if the Republicans hang on to that senatorial seat down in Florida, they will have how many, 53 or 52?
53. They'll have 52, and then there is a runoff in Mississippi, because Mississippi, like Georgia, if you don't get 50% of the vote in the first round, you go to a second round of voting. But the Republican is likely to carry Mississippi, so it'll be 53.
Okay. All right. Well, now, with the strong majority that the Democrats have in the House, do you see Nancy Pelosi becoming the Speaker?
Yeah, I imagine so. I don't know if there is going to. I can't imagine there's going to be a sizable coup. I don't know. I can't imagine there'll be a sizable coup and that they'll organize. Nancy Pelosi really did invest very heavily in making sure the Democrats would win. Even if there are 30 or 40 Democrats who do not vote for her, there's a private meeting that's held before the House vote on the floor. And in the private meeting, that's when they lash it out. But, at the end of the day, what are they going to do? 40 members are going to sit there and vote for somebody else besides Nancy Pelosi and give Kevin McCarthy the speakership?
No.
The speakers aren't elected by popular vote of party. You could elect anybody as Speaker of the House. They don't need to be a congressman. You could elect me as Speaker of the House. You could elect anybody as Speaker of the House. So what are they going to do, vote for somebody else and give the speakership to Kevin McCarthy? Because he'll have a united Republican effort or a semi-united Republican effort. Seems kind of a little strange to me. I don't think that they're necessarily going to do that, though. So we'll see. We'll wait and see, but I just don't imagine that that's actually going to happen.
Well, I happened to catch Nancy Pelosi's speech after the election on a flight I was taking to the West Coast day after the election, and she was making nice, like she was going to really try to work with President Trump. What are the chances of that?
Well, there are areas that Trump and her actually have a lot of agreement. Trump very much wants to deal with something with infrastructure. So does Nancy Pelosi. They both want to bring down the price of prescription drugs. They both would like to do something about higher education and student debt. There's a real chance. I think so much of the problem of the first 2 years of the Trump presidency, and I've been writing quite a bit about this, is that Trump really outsourced so much of his legislative agenda to Paul Ryan that what we got was Paul Ryan's agenda, not Trump's agenda. And that's why we worked on, stupid things like the tax cuts for a year and a half and the Obamacare repeal, which was horrible, rather than focusing on what people voted for Donald Trump for. They voted for him for immigration, for trade, for less wars, for better infrastructure, for putting America first, for reducing the gap between the rich and the poor, and to invest in the working poor. And I think that between Trump and Pelosi, they do share a few pieces of an agenda that they could work for together. And I don't think that they necessarily have to be adversarial roles. I'll say one other thing is that Alexandra Pelosi, Nancy Pelosi's daughter, and me one time shared a bus ride, and Alexandra Pelosi told me that Nancy much preferred working with President Bush than President Obama. So, yeah. I mean, it's not like she's never worked with a Republican before, and maybe something can get done. Who knows?
Well, we can try to be optimistic, I guess. It would be nice. But, boy, the rancor has been so severe recently, in recent times, that it's just been very discouraging in many ways. I think you mentioned to me that before we went on the show that something like 47% of the people don't pay taxes. Is it 40% of the voters,
well,
or is 40% of the population?
It's like 45% don't pay taxes. Yeah, because they make so little income, or 40% make so little income that they actually get money back from the government. It's the earned income tax credit. But that's why it made no sense for Republicans to focus their entire first year agenda on reducing personal income tax. I mean, you know, I believe that they needed to reduce corporate income tax because I do think, you know, we need to be more competitive. But why are we giving tax breaks to people and to companies who are then going off to give, you know, sponsorship roles to the guy, the football player who kneels for the flag? You know, you're giving $1 billion tax cuts to companies who are then using it to promote socialism. Yeah, I mean, it's just, to me, that's bonkers. I think that's why the establishment Republicans truly don't get, they don't understand, you know, modern culture and how the legislative agenda should have been used to promote a more cohesive culture. But their time in office is basically done now. Paul Ryan's gone. Most of his allies are gone. Everyone who basically supported the Dreamer Bill is basically gone. So we'll see if the Republicans can patch together some kind of coalition going into 2020 that they can let them retake the House and at least keep their 53-47 majority in the Senate.
53-47, and there could be another Supreme Court justice coming up, I suppose. It looks like that's a very real possibility.
Ginsburg will not be on the bench all this week. She's still recovering. I mean, listen, I'm not wishing any harm on anybody, but she's 85 years old with two broken ribs. I took care of my grandfather and my grandmother in their 80s. I know about elderly people and how something like a fall could hurt them. She's a woman of a certain age. There's another Supreme Court justice who's 80 years old. So, yeah, that would be – and also there's tons of vacancies on the Ninth Circuit Court as well. It's not just the Supreme Court. It's the circuit courts as well.
Well, you mentioned several things that Donald Trump was elected for that they haven't paid too much attention to. I mean, one of the reasons, frankly, that I voted for him had to do with his desire to pull back or to engage in fewer wars. It seems to me, Ryan, as though that might be one area where it doesn't matter who the president is. There's powers that be that actually want to keep military spending alive and well. President Eisenhower, first president I can remember, because I'm so much older than you, I can remember Ike. Ike was really very concerned about the military-industrial complex, and I don't know what your thoughts are about that, but it seems to me as much as he wanted to, I guess maybe he hasn't been as aggressive as some people would like him to be. But the only area that he seemed to get any real praise for was
I'll say this. I mean, I'm a peace hawk, I like to call myself. Yes, there are a million interests that are saying keep America at war. I will give Trump some criticism that he hasn't brought our troops home from Afghanistan, that he hasn't brought all the rest of our troops home from Iraq. He hasn't done those things, and I wish he had. However, he did end the funding of al-Qaeda in Syria. He has been sending people to negotiate to stop a war in North Korea. And he has been pushing over and over and over again to end the war in Afghanistan. The problem is with Trump, as with any world leader, is that this is according to the Bob Woodward book, where Trump was like, okay, I'm pulling our troops out of Afghanistan. And they said, well, you can expect another 9/11 to happen. And when that's the implication, and that's what the people are telling him over and over again, is that your choice is either to end the war in Afghanistan or get another 9/11, you know, it makes you sit there and question and wonder. There was a story today in the Bloomberg, I think it was, about how he's trying to negotiate with the Taliban and to end the war in Afghanistan, how he's trying to, how they just announced they're cutting fueling Saudi Arabian planes in Yemen. And then there's the ongoing attempt to make peace in North Korea. It is not happening as quickly as I would like. And he has not started any new wars.
Right.
So it's
That's
not
true.
Happening as quickly as I would like. I would like him to pull out of NATO completely, but instead he's trying to get the Europeans to at least push in their 2%. I would like him to do all those things. He hasn't been as aggressive as I would like. That being said, he has been further in the right direction than in the wrong direction.
I would agree with you on that. You know, that he's threatened, or he's told by his advisors, I guess, that if he pulls out of Afghanistan, we might have another 9/11. And I have to think about President Kennedy actually rejected a false flag code named Operation Northwoods. It was planned by the Joint Chiefs of Staff to get the American support behind the overthrow of Cuba. It makes you wonder. I don't know. It's dangerous to go off on theories, but you do have to wonder about some of these things. Ryan, anything else you'd like to add before we conclude our discussion today?
If anyone would like to read more of my stuff, you can visit me on my Facebook page, Ryan James Gruduski, GIRDUSKY, or on Twitter at Ryan Gruduski.
Absolutely.
And my website,
very good.
RyanGruduski.com. So.
All right. And you also write for the Washington Examiner, I guess, right?
Washington Examiner, The Week magazine. I have a very big piece coming out in December for the American Conservative magazine about the rise of right-wing nationalist populism worldwide and what started it and how it was created. So they can check out that when it comes out. So,
excellent. All right. Very good. Well, I have to start paying more attention to what you're doing because I think you have some really interesting stuff. And,
nice.
and you're a neighbor of mine, so even more so.
Yes,
thanks
exactly.
So much, Ryan, for being with us, and we'll look to do it again sometime soon.
Thank you.
All right. Bye. All right, folks, we do have to go to break now. Don't go away, though. Dan Oliver is going to be with us, and we're going to pursue this idea of whether or not it's sort of ridiculous to own gold shares when you can make so much money in the big market. Don't go away. We'll be right back with Dan Oliver.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
Triumph Gold holds a 100% interest in the district scale Free Gold Mountain Gold Copper Project in Yukon, with a government-maintained road accessing their 200-square-kilometer property.
The 2018 drill program has resulted in exciting discoveries to date, hitting the richest intersection ever
in a porphyry system in Yukon.
The company is well-funded and has a large institutional holding, including Goldcorp and Zijin Mining. Triumph trades on the TSX Venture under the symbol TIG and the OTC markets TIGCF. The website is triumphgoldcorp.com.
Gold Mining, Inc., ticker symbol GOLD on the TSX and GLDLF on the OTC, is the biggest bet for gold investors and legendary investors like Doug Casey, Rick Rule, and Marin Katusa, who put millions of dollars into backing the company, along with institutional investors. The insiders own over 20%. Gold Mining has strong cash and no debt. It's one of the top 1% of gold companies that has over 20 million ounces of gold resources. Visit goldmining.com.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.